Monday morning here in Texas. Well, really Monday afternoon. I guess I'm saying morning for a couple reasons. One, it's a Monday. All day Monday feels like morning. Two, it looks like morning. It's just dreary and nasty and cold and wet. It's not that cold. I think it's in the 40s. It might even hit the low 50s right now, but it's like, you know, 80% humidity and windy. So that's always nasty. So it just feels like morning and it's Monday and the anyway, we do have a great topic today. This episode's called Living Outside the Matrix. And this is actually going to be a two-parter. I'm not even going to tell you exactly what the second part is going to be, but I will tell you it will be tomorrow. So it'll be consecutive one day to the next. And there'll be some allusions to what part two is during today's episode, especially when you're like, but wait a minute, I can't quite go. Yeah, well, you'll see. And maybe some of you will jump to the conclusion for a little pop culture reference there. I've been known to say I have a pop culture reference for everything, but all my pop culture references, 90% of them anywhere are like 20 years old or older. Anyway, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff with the concept of living outside the matrix. And this actually came from, I'm working with Josh Hale right now on his 28-day AI challenge. And there was a question about this, living outside the matrix, one of his prompts in the challenge. And the AI unit, which has been helping me a great deal with my show structure over the last couple of years, listed all this stuff. And I said, gee, that sounds a lot like my podcast. And it basically acknowledged that. But then I was thinking about it. I said, you know, we haven't really talked about it from this angle in a long time. Let's do a show, Living Outside the Matrix. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to start off with, was it seven parts, scenes from the original movie, the first movie, which was, in my opinion, the best movie. And it kind of went downhill from there. But the trilogy was okay, right? But the reboot was just stupid. It should have never been done. I should never trust them to reboot anything anymore, I think. But just from the first movie, we got seven scenes we're going to talk about, how they actually apply to the real world. And then we're going to go through 10 keys to freedom and escaping the matrix in the real world. And then I'll kind of hint at what we're going to do tomorrow that's sort of kind of the same but different, man. Another pop culture reference, far more than 20 years old, by the way. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Start9 private servers. One of the things we will talk about today is digital sovereignty and controlling your data, understanding your digital footprint and how it can be used against you. A great place to start is a Start9 digital server. Once you have that set up, you take back so much control over your life. Being able to access your files anywhere, totally encrypted, over Tor from anywhere in the world alone is a good reason for this. Running your own Bitcoin node, another great reason. Running your own Lightning node, another great reason. Totally encrypted messaging only for the people you let in, another great reason. The biggest reason, though, is you get all this tech power, and it keeps getting built on. So the beautiful thing with Start9 is you have this device, and then you add other features to the device through something very similar to an app store, which literally means if you can use a smartphone right now, you already have one, most of you do, you know how to install an app and then configure and use an app, which most of you do, then you already have most of what you need to be able to make this work. Check them out today at start9.com. And remember, if you're an MSB member, they give you 9% off all purchases at start9.com. Next up today is JM Bullion. We're going to be talking about financial sovereignty today. And I do think the greatest step you can take in your life toward financial sovereignty at this point in evolution of society is Bitcoin. But gold and silver are a damn close second. And in fact, I say this all the time when I'm talking to people who are just in love with gold, I guess, you know, the people that would like, I don't know, wash Peter Schiff's feet for him or something like that. If there was no Bitcoin, then this is where I would be focusing all my efforts. It has a place in your wealth assurance program. Check out JM Bullion. You get better pricing than Monex, Apmex, Lear Capital. I can personally connect with the president of the company if necessary. That's something no other Silver House ever offered me, was that direct line access to the guy that can just say, I said fix it now, why isn't it fixed already, right? Like, that was important. And then they also ship free, and they give you a discount if you're an MSB member. So check them out today at jmbullion.com. If you're going to be buying gold and silver online, then you should buy it from the company that will give you a discount. You know that I've got the hookup on the inside track if there's ever a problem, not that it's very common. And they support the show you love. So let's go on and dig on into the show today. I don't have, like, if a lot of times when you are listening to this in the audio, it's not just about seeing me. It's about some screenshots and things that you might want to look up. Not really today. I'm not going to really use any screen-based help with this. We're just going to go through everything and talk about it. I thought about maybe playing some of the scenes or something, but it's just too much hassle. So this will be kind of like an old-school TSP episode, you know, going all the way back. I think the first time I ever did a show that invoked the Matrix red pill and blue pill was about 2009. So it's about as old school as it gets. You can only go one half year back from that, because TSP was born when? June 20th, 2008. That's how long we've been around, which means we will turn 17 years old this year. That's crazy. Anyway, let's talk about the movie The Matrix. And like I said, well, the trilogy anyway, and specifically, I think all of these scenes I came up with came from the first movie. If I'm wrong, so be it. First of all, remember Cypher when he betrays everybody and he's talking to the agents and he says, you can put me back inside, right? And he's eating a steak and he says, I know this isn't real, but I don't care. It doesn't matter because it tastes good and it makes me happy. Can you come up with, honestly, think about it, especially those of you who've been around a while, we've talked about these things before. Have you ever heard a better explanation of the fiat economy? I don't even just mean the fiat currency. I mean the entirety of the fiat economy. I've said this before, but my dad lives in a house that my grandparents bought in the 1930s. It was built in the 1800s. My dad is not really kept pace with society, I guess would be one nice way to put it. I don't want to say anything really horrible about my dad, but let's just say he's not taking care of the place. He hadn't done shit to it since the 90s, and it's still standing. He's still living there. The house is about 150 years old, and if you go down in the basement and try to put a nail in the joist boards that support the floor, you can't get a nail in them. It's like trying to nail in a rock. It's oak. It's 1800s oak. It is not a fiat structure. It's not a big house, but it was built in the time of hard money. And it was built as a real house with real money. What we build today, we have entire neighborhoods falling apart 15 to 25 years after they start building them. It's all fiat. Everything's fiat. If you go into New York City and you look at some of the churches, just for instance, that were built in the 1800s or early 1900s during hard money, you couldn't even build that church today. Some of the sculpture work on the facades on the outside alone, you could never afford to do. This had to be done at a time when money was real and we made real things. So to me, the whole, the steak isn't real, but I don't care, is a perfect analog to fiat society. How about the name Neo? It's not really a scene. It's just an overriding thing. You know, we hear things all the time where the word Neo gets used, right? Neo-Nazis, neo-liberals, neo-conservatives. People throw that word all the time, all over the place. But what does Neo mean? Do you know how many people use the word Neo and they have no idea what the word Neo means? It means new. It means new. So Neo was the one, but his name was New. The one new. And of course, what did we learn by the last movie in the trilogy? This had all happened before, and it was all going to happen again. This had all happened before, and it was all going to happen again. Weimar Republic, the fall of Rome, right? I mean, the fall of Sparta. Like, every government that's ever existed has created this artificial fiat world and eventually had a collapse every single time. So to me, that was one of the most telling things in the movie that most people never caught. And I really didn't get it until I saw the third movie. I'll be honest. I saw the third movie and I went, oh, shit, how did I not see this? Nope, there it is. Neo means new. It was always going to start all over again. How about the red and blue pill? The red and blue pill. So in the movie, of course, you know, Neo starts to awaken. He starts to get communications from people that are outside the Matrix. He knows something's not right. He can't quite put his finger on it. Eventually, he gets to a point where he meets Morpheus and he gets the red or the blue pill. He chooses the red pill and he wakes up to reality. And when he wakes up to reality, it's awful, isn't it? Like, it's like this slime slip and slide thing full of like gunk that he flies out of. He finds these things stuck in his back and his neck. He's in a pod full of gross goo. Think about it. Now, here's what that symbolism really is to me anyway. When you wake up to the reality of the world that we live in, the nature of fiat, the nature of government control, propaganda, lies, deception, the oligarchy, the technocracy, all of it, you don't feel good about it when you first wake up. You're like, woohoo, I woke up. You're like, this can't be. This can't be, right? There's no possible way. It hurts. It's painful. And when it really hurts is when you try to tell somebody else who's not ready to wake up yet. There's a little lesson in there, too, about not awakening someone who's not ready to be awakened, right? And the older you get, the harder it is to be awakened. The more you've been part of the system, the harder it is to come out. But there is pain in waking up. Do you know what we call that pain? Cognitive dissonance. So we've made that word so negative because we apply it to people as an offshoot all the time. Well, that can't be true because Fauci said so or whatever. You know, you're like, you have cognitive dissonance. You tell somebody an absolute indisputable fact and they explain their way around the fact. And then they tell you, but your guy really sucks too. And you're like, I don't have a guy. And so we've made cognitive dissonance something that only applies to people who are, you know, whatever we think of as trapped and unwilling to wake up, right? Libtards or whatever it is, right? Well, the reality is that cognitive dissonance is a feeling of discomfort when your mind is being confronted with facts counter to its root belief system, and you're no more immune to the pain of cognitive dissonance than you are immune to the pain of sticking your hand on something hot and getting burned. And in fact, I was watching something recently. It was a commercial for something, I don't know, like a movie or a series coming out. And this guy is got that illness or that genetic thing where you don't feel pain. And the one girl tells him he's a superhero. I'm like, no, you're not a superhero. This is a good way to die. You need pain. You have to have pain in your life. If you don't have pain in your life, bad shit happens. Imagine what happens to your hand if you're not paying attention and you sit it on a high burner. And you don't know you did it until you smell your own flesh burning. You're like, oh, wait, it doesn't just go away. Just because it doesn't hurt doesn't mean you don't have a problem. You have a very serious problem. Cognitive dissonance exists for the same reason physical pain does. So that you don't just instantly accept anything anybody tells you. So that there is this kind of conflict in the mind that says, whoa, hold on. And then the more plausible it becomes and the deeper your belief, the more painful release is. The difference is the pain of cognitive dissonance goes away really fast. Once you accept this new reality and you let go of the old reality, there's no lasting pain, but there can be lasting trauma as well. So there's an analogy there too. How about humans as batteries? Humans as batteries. Well, see, the machines turned us into Duracell batteries. And that's what people think is going to happen with AI. You really think that was about AI? The machine is them. The machine is what you're seeing being dismantled right now, at least partially, by the Adderall-infused autistics that are part of the Doge Army. That's the machine. And that machine has been torn apart many times. And what immediately happens after you tear the machine apart, Neo? New, gets rebuilt. It gets rebuilt. Steiny says USAID proves the battery theory. What does it really prove, though? That's what we are. We're batteries that make the system run. As long as you stay plugged into the matrix and just go on with your life and do what you're told and follow the rules and be a good little boy, Johnny, and good little girl, Susie, you do what your teacher said, you get your degree, you put it on the wall, you go to work, you work for 40 or 50 years, and you retire, and you think you're going to have this great retirement, and you live for a few more years before you can actually, you can still do shit, and then your whole body falls apart, and then your kids blow all your money right back into the system, and it all starts all over again. Yeah. The battery is about what we really are to the system. We're tax cattle. We give our financial blood and our physical blood to a system that exists only to extract from us. It does not exist to serve us. It never did. And it never will either. We have to create our... The only people who will build a system to serve you are you. Think about it. Are you going to build a system... Now, let's take capitalism out of that for a second, okay? I'm talking about a macro system, an all-enveloping system. You're the architect? Huh, there's an interesting word, the architect. You're the architect of a system. Do you really build it to serve the needs of the people in the system? Or if you have that much power, do you build it to serve your needs and the needs of your community? Not really hard to figure out there, right? The architect, yeah. How about the deja vu scene with the cat? Remember, he sees the cat, and then he tells Morpheus that he thinks he saw something. He says, I told you. You saw that cat twice, like a glitch in the Matrix. You know what that really is? I bet you no one's told you this one before. This is what I think it is. I think it's that when the rules change, the financial rules change, or what you're allowed to say, that rule changes. When we see a massive shift, a rapid shift in the rules of society, well, that's when you know that those in power are altering the rules because they feel they're losing control. They fear that too many people are becoming awake to this reality. See, they don't really care that you live in Zion with a couple thousand others that understand what's going on and fight them. They actually kind of need you doing that. But when they start to realize that, like, way too many people are starting to wiggle inside the pod, way too many of those, text messages are going back and forth saying, hey, you want to meet up? You want to know what's really going on? You want me to tell you? And instead of snore, there starts to be responsive, yeah, I kind of do. We need to shake things up. We need to change things. That means they're losing control. And if you think about the entirety of what the whole COVID scandemic was, come on. Any of you who haven't seen it, it's been floating around recently. If you haven't seen it recently, the longer we move away from it, the more preposterous and ridiculous it looks. I'm talking about the video where they have, like, Bill Gates as the DJ. And it's all it's like this like techno music, and it's all the dancing nurses, and it's about 3 minutes of the dancing TikTok nurses, and then it cuts to people that were going to the hospitals, walking through the hospitals that are completely empty, just showing the whole thing to be a psyop. It looked completely ridiculous to anybody that was halfway awake, right in the middle of it. When you look at it now, oh my God. The level of cringe and the level of how stupid did you have to be to believe it? But I tell you right now, some of the people saying it right now, oh, I never believed it. Yeah, you did. You followed the arrows in the supermarket and you got mad at the people who didn't. You drove down the road with the mask on your face in your car by yourself, even though you knew intellectually that it would never work. Because they even told you it would never work and then told you to do it. It was like the most ridiculous form of grown-up Simon Says that ever existed. And it was like, if you ever remember, like if you're an 80s kid, you remember like playing Simon Says in school. And there's a point where like all the dumb kids are out. And now there's like, out of a class of like 30, there's like 5 kids left. And the teacher keeps trying to do it. And they're finally like, okay, these are the ones that understand. I either Simon said it or I didn't. And then they start just saying Simon Says and seeing how stupid they could get you to behave. Yeah, that used to happen in school, right? And to where you would actually get yourself not, I don't want to do this anymore, right? That was that level of Simon Says. Like, you know, 80% of the population were the dumb kids willing to just keep playing the game. If they came out and said, the way we need to do to prevent this from spreading is you need to walk around with your left thumb up your ass and your right finger in your nose hole, people would have just been walking around like that, right? I mean, they would have sold out of petroleum jelly, I'm just saying, if they would have put that out. That's a rule change. And then was there ever censorship to that level prior to that happening? And then it got applied to other things as well. Like, you can't possibly question an election. Like, it was violently opposed. And I'm not talking about the street violence. I'm talking about by tech platforms, by media platforms. They violently destroyed people's livelihoods over it. That never had happened before. There'd been some cancel culture and things like that. But this wholesale, anybody that says these things is immediately annihilated, had never occurred. That was a rule change. When they start making changes to the money, changing to the financial system. We had this 10% reserve requirement when we went off of hard money in 71 until, you know, a few years ago, they said, we don't need a reserve requirement at all anymore. Even changing the appearance of the money. All of these things are signs the Matrix is glitching out. Too many people are waking up, and we need to do something to put those motherfuckers back to sleep so they can be the batteries and tax cattle we intend them to be. About the spoon bending scene. There is no spoon. It's been used a ton. But to me, the spoon bending scene actually goes into one of my laws of life about walls. So one of my laws of life about walls is when you have a dream and you dream of a wall and you have a lucid dream where you wake up and you realize, oh, I'm dreaming. And you start playing like I do this sometimes. You kind of wake up in the middle of your dream like, oh, wait a minute. No shit. This is a dream. Is this a dream? I think it's a dream. I better not do anything too stupid because I'm not sure. Can I float? Oh, look, I can float in the air. I can fly. Okay, no shit. This is a dream, right? And then you start playing with it. You're like, I'm going to walk through that wall. Most of the time, you won't be able to walk through the wall. You won't be able to walk through the wall. Like it'll be like a sponge. You'd like new or like Neo's face when the agents shut him up and he couldn't talk. And it was like stretchy, gooey. Like, or it's just hard, or it's just like your hand goes into it. But why? It's your wall. You put it there. To get through the wall, you have to realize there is no wall. Even if you know there is no wall, until you truly believe there isn't a wall, until you remove the wall, because you can remove the wall in a dream like that. But while you see it as a wall, you put it there. It's yours. That's everything about what keeps you back in society. That is one of the primary tools of the Matrix. It isn't just that the Matrix will build walls to keep you in. They will convince you to build your own walls to imprison yourself. I can't do this because. 9 times out of 10, when somebody says, I can't do this because, it's not even that they have not been exposed to a way to change that. It's bullshit, and internally they know it's bullshit when they say it, but it's comforting because I really don't care if the steak's real or not. It tastes good. It makes me happy. That is the spoon. That's the spoon. Last one, dodging bullets. Zoom, 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 man. He was all super powered. No, that's you. That's you. You're Neo. Dodging bullets that the state, the agents of the state are firing at you, and you can dodge the bullets. You don't shoot the agent. You don't kill the agent. You just a little move here, a little move there, and bullets go whiz by you harmlessly. In fact, you get to that point where, you know, like the bullet's coming and it seems to be going so slow because you're moving at a different level mentally that you can just kind of like, you can ignore it until it's pretty close and just step out of the way. Kind of like a spot. Remember the first Spider-Man movie, the scene in that where the things are going on, but he's seeing them like they're in slow motion like that. That's status jujitsu. That's what that is. That's when you learn about the black and gray markets. That's when you learn about how to take a black market, turn it into a gray market. That's how you learn how to take a gray market and turn it into a white market. It's completely acceptable. That's a food church or a food club. That's a corporation that holds another corporation that holds the actual asset. That's all of the gimmicks and games that we can play inside their own system to be compliant with what they want while we're actually getting what we want. That's what the rich do that you don't. That's what the rich teach their children that poor people don't teach their children. Status jujitsu. That's how you win the game. Whether you're in the system or out of it doesn't even matter. And that should give you a little bit of a clue of what we're going to talk about tomorrow. All right, so let's talk about getting freedom from the matrix. There's 10 primary areas that you need to look at. And there's more, but these are the, if you can pull off these 10, then you can literally build anything you want in your life. The first one is financial sovereignty. Financial sovereignty means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And that's perfectly understandable because freedom is defined by the individual experience in it, not by the person setting the rules for another individual. And what I mean by that is if I gave everybody listening to me right now, everybody could hear the sound of my voice at this moment, $100 million tax-free, you know, whatever you'd have to pay taxes on to get your $100 million, like if it's $143,537.21, almost like I worked out the math or something for the average person, then I give you that much money. You pay your taxes. You have $100 million in front of you, free and clear. You can do anything you want with it. Every single one of you would do something different with that money. None of your lives would look the same. None of your lives would look the same. Some people would invest it. Some people would make it safe. But that's not even what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is every one of you would live in a house that looks different from other people. You'd live in a place that's different from other people. You'd have people around you that are different from the other people that got the $100 million. None of you would live the same as anybody else, including many of you who know each other in the real world, because tons of people in our community that know each other in the real world. Some of you guys are even neighbors. But if I gave you $100 million, you might move. And if Bill doesn't, and if Bill got $100 million too, and he don't want to go, well, see you, Bill. Here's my new address. Here's my, you know, you got my email and my phone number. I won't change that. You know, I would, though, if I were you, somebody gave you $100 million, I'd change your number and give that out on a need-to-know basis. But you get my drift there. Financial sovereignty means different things because sovereignty in itself means different things. To me, the beauty of financial sovereignty, what that means to me is you have enough income doing something you would do for free that you can pretty much live your life on your terms and no one can take it away from you. If you can be fired, you don't have financial sovereignty. Now, if you have worked long enough in an employment environment that you've created enough fuck you money that you're only working because you actually do like what you do, well, that's different. Because if somebody fires you, you don't give a fuck. Which means if your boss comes to you and asks you to do something that really compromises your personal integrity, you're going to be like, so you can shove that up your ass. In fact, why don't you stick your head up your own ass, blow as hard as you can until your ass explodes. And when they say, well, you're fired, you know, I kind of think when I started that sentence, I don't know if you realize that was like a letter of resignation, Bill. I don't really give a fuck, right? That's financial sovereignty, even if you're still working, because you don't care. So when somebody says, you have to take the stabby stab or I'm going to get rid of you, you go, so like, let's talk about where I, like, so do I leave now or do you need me to finish for two more weeks or what do you want from me? Because I'm not doing that. That's financial sovereignty. And that is the ultimate first step in true freedom is design your life in a way that whatever income you can create through that type of passive stream works. It doesn't even matter if it's where you want to end your life. Like, it doesn't matter if you still want to keep building. The minute you get to the point where you're like, oh, look at my home, my land, my bills, everything around me, I don't even worry about paying for it anymore. I have to remember to pay it on time, not worry about if I can pay it. And if somebody were to take away my job or tell me they don't like me anymore or whatever, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I've already made the two ends meet and it's done. Now you can build anything you want. Next is self-sufficiency. And it's actually a big part of financial sovereignty. The person who has an off-grid home, for instance, and I know, right? And again, We're going to talk tomorrow about how it's not necessarily all or nothing here, right? But the person has a full-on off-grid home. They have a solar array. They have backup batteries. Maybe they have a little windmill. Maybe they have a little creek running with micro hydro. And maybe they have that creek dammed up to run that little micro hydro generator. And behind the dam is a nice big deep pool of cool water full of like trout swimming around in shit. And those trout are breeders, and they're going to be making baby trouts. And you literally have to harvest a certain amount of trout every year, because if you don't do it, they're going to overpopulate and stunt. So you have to eat the free food, or the free food will get too little. Things like that. You have a garden. You like gardening. And you have food that comes out of the garden. And you have, you know, you don't work. Like when people say eggs are $10 a dozen, you're like, well, that's how much I charge for my eggs. What are you talking, from the store? You buy eggs from a store? If you want the best eggs on the planet, I have them for that price. Now you're buying shit for that price? Oh, okay. You don't care anymore. This is self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency is a perfect place to talk about this crossover tomorrow, because it's measured in percentages. But the person that actually pulls it off, that they're like 100% self-sufficient, that doesn't mean they don't ever go to the grocery store, they don't ever buy anything. But if they didn't, they wouldn't die. Nothing would go away. They could just stay there and use whatever's there, whatever they can capture, kill, breed, bring in, grow. They'd be that person doesn't give a fuck. Let me tell you, there are people like this who have very, very little, but they are the epitome of do not give a fuck, homeless. I went to a place where I spoke at an event, and one of the guys there was talking about his experiences with running a homeless encampment, and specifically during COVID when they were telling homeless people that they had to wear masks and shit like that. This guy's literally like sleeping in the dirt, and they're worried about him wearing a mask. He said, you want to be told to fuck off. This fast. Go tell a homeless person what they need to be doing. They don't care. What are you going to take from them? What are you going to do? You're going to put them in jail? You're going to feed them and house them and clothe them? Like, yeah, I was doing that for myself here with shit I found in the garbage, but you want to, ah, fine, fuck it. I don't care. I'm not saying to take that approach. I'm just pointing out that that mental state and that true level of self-sufficiency can be reached by someone who's homeless. And surely you can pull it off, or at least some high percentage thereof. And when you add it up to the other things, that starts to change everything. How about your digital sovereignty? That is, Hey Hey Alabama says that homeless equals master survivalist. And I'll take this time to note that if you would like to ask me a question, have me comment on something today, word comment or question in all caps, or I promise you, One Eye Jack will not see it. But digital sovereignty, this is about controlling your data and understanding your digital footprint. There are people that they try to live like fucking Jason Bourne, completely off the grid. And when I say that, I don't mean the off-grid cabin. I mean off the electronic grid. No one knows where I am. No one can find me. Like, things like that, going totally dark, are doable. And I've had a guest recently said if you do that, then you actually set off other alarms. Yeah, it doesn't matter if they can't find you. I'm not worried about it. I'm just saying it's not practical for most people. Again, alluding to tomorrow. How many times are we going to do that today? I don't know. Maybe when somebody in a live chat switches on to what tomorrow is, I'll stop throwing those little drops. But what I mean by this is, if you understood your digital footprint, then you'd at least know, when I do this thing, this is who knows I did it, and this is what they think that it means. That's a big part of it. And then you would figure out, like, I don't have to go dark. Maybe I just need to minimize some things. Maybe my conversation with my wife using my phone to send her a text doesn't really need to be on an app that I'm promised is encrypted, and I'm promised isn't being shared with anybody, and I'm promised if the government sends them a letter and says they want to see it, that they won't give it to them until they grab the guy that runs the app signal and hold him and say, if you don't do what we, okay, I'll do it. Maybe I need a way where if anybody says, I'm going to send a letter to somebody, go ahead, don't care. You can send it to whoever owns whatever. I don't care, because I run it myself and I'm saying no. Oh, by the way, isn't it funny? I have the right to say no about my own data because I have a right against self-incrimination. Isn't that interesting? especially when that data is not held of any type of third-party service. It's my own property. Now, there are judges that have held people in contempt until they gave them a password, and those people were stupid. They should have said, I lost it. I don't know what it is. Oh, no, I can't help you. I'm not doing it because the Constitution says I don't have to. That's where we head to the next one, by the way. Status jujitsu. Status jujitsu. That is when you operate in gray areas. For those that are on the video, I'm pointing, right? You operate in the gray areas and you figure out how to turn the black into the gray and you turn the gray into the white. This is things like how you structure things, knowing what to say, knowing what not to say, knowing when to shut the fuck up. See, that's what the Fifth Amendment should have actually been written for the modern person and modern lingo. You have a right to shut the fuck up, and you should. Never trust a single motherfucker that says they're trying to help you from the government who's investigating or might be investigating anything. Because in the end, their success or failure is judged on whether or not they get somebody either convicted or audited or fined or shut down. That's actually how their success is judged. Nobody ever tells a cop, you know what, Officer Bill? You did such a good job policing those neighborhoods over there that you haven't written a ticket. You haven't brought anybody to jail. You're a fantastic cop. You did so good. You destroyed criminal activity in your area of concern. There is no, you did great. We're going to give you a raise. It's like, hey, man, you got to pay for your salary. You have to make enough money that we can justify your existence. You're not busting heads, man. You're not writing enough tickets. One of my relations, who is a cop, said, well, we don't have quotas. I said, bullshit. He said, no, we don't have quotas. I'm like, can they tell you you're not writing enough tickets? He goes, oh, yeah, they do that all the time. That would be a quota. That would be a quota. It's just not a number that they give you, a specific quota, but there's clearly a number. How do they know you're not writing? Like, it was really funny when I asked them. I said, how do they know you're not writing enough tickets? Well, will they just know? I'm like, so does that mean if you wrote 10 more tickets that month that they would have said anything to you? He said, well, I'm not sure. Well, I'm like, there is a number of tickets you would have written, and then you would have never heard that, right? Yeah. I'm like, so by not giving you the number, they can actually push the number that you write higher than your quota. Because if you knew the number was 100, let's say, then you'd write 100 tickets a month. That's enough paperwork. I'll go do other things. But when you don't know what the number is, you just keep doing it until they leave you alone. It's actually a worse type of quota that way because nobody's really sure. Therefore, you're more predisposed to see an infraction, whether it's actually there or not, or whether it's necessary or not to see it. Like the cop that wrote my father-in-law a ticket many years ago, there was a place where there were two schools and two school zones. And there's honest to God, no exaggeration, about 10 yards between a sign that said end school zone and a sign that turned the school zone back on. There's no reason for that one sign in the middle that like that 10 yards was unnecessary. It was there only to be a trap. And where this fucking cop sat, he sat right the fuck there because he knew what everybody did. You're driving in a school zone. The school zone's active for 2 fucking hours. All the kids are in fucking school. All the kids are on buses at the school, by the way. Big giant fucking field. No kids ever do you see anywhere near the road at this place. Ever. I swear to God, I lived in that place for a decade. No children were ever seen where that school zone was, ever. It was nothing but a trap. Wrote them a ticket. Why? Because you do have a quota. You lying fuck. That's why, right? That is the reality that we live with. And that's why you have to understand that you need to understand their playbook so you can avoid it. And once you do, then you can go way beyond, you know, like, not actually incriminating yourself when you try to talk yourself out of something. You can literally set things up to where you can go, this is what I'm doing. You can make a screen capture video of your corporate structure and send it to the IRS, and all they can do is go, damn, that's status jujitsu. Status jujitsu is understanding if I can't sell X, but I can sell Y, maybe I can sell Y and give X away for free with Y. That would just be another example. Status jujitsu is when they say you cannot in any way in this state sell raw milk. And you say, What if I sell it for pet food? Sometimes that's enough. And they say, yeah, well, you can do that. Sometimes they say, nope, we have a prohibition against that. Can't sell it as pet food. Cannot sell it, period, for consumption, for anything. You can't sell raw milk to feed it to a baby calf. As dumb as that would be. Okay, fine. Can I sell it for a soil amendment? They check your book. It doesn't say anything about that. Does it say that it can't be sold at all, or does it specifically say what it can't be sold to do? Well, it specifically says you can't do it for these things, so that, oh, yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to sell it as a soil amendment. We're going to put a warning label on it. It says it's a violation of state and federal law to use this product in a manner inconsistent with its labeling. How do you like that? We don't like it. Yeah, but can you do anything about it? Bye-bye. That's status jujitsu. And there's a million ways to skin that cat. And if you actually want freedom and sovereignty in the world today, you need to figure out all of them that apply to you. Not all of them apply to me. How about geographic arbitrage? What's geographic arbitrage? Geographic arbitrage is when you're like, you know, the things I really want to do are, even if they're not impossible here, they are so hard, they're no longer worth doing. And you get out a map and you look at it and you say, if I went here, does that change? And if it doesn't, you say, if I went here, you might even start doing some research. You might even use a tool some of you are afraid of, AI, to find the locations where you can do the thing you want to do. You might even find you have to combine something like status jujitsu and geographic arbitrage. Sometimes the geographic arbitrage isn't even about you. It's about the location of your company or your base of operations or your point of sale. Sometimes that's down the road. Here's an example. Where I live, I can do anything that I want. I know you don't live here, but Holt, hear me out. Let me really paint this picture for you. Let me explain what I mean when I say I can do anything I want. I could right now build a shack, and I could call it Jack's Taco Shack, and I could open a little restaurant right over in my western field, right out by the road with a sign, Jack's Taco Shack. And I don't have to do shit. I don't have to have anybody come in and inspect it. I don't have to do shit. I can just open that up. If I try to do that, 1.5 miles to my east, the Department of Making Me Sad will come and make me very, very sad. That little movement changes what I'm allowed to do. That's geographic arbitrage. But I can't afford a place like yours. Can you afford rent from somebody like me? Maybe the thing you want to do can be done geographically just a little far away from you. 10 minutes, 15 minutes by car or truck. And all you need is someone that like sees things the way that we do and says, yeah, I'll rent you this little plot of land. And then both people are enjoying commerce. That's just one. So it can be, you know, fuck this shit in New York City. This is bullshit. I'm moving to Florida. It can be that drastic. Or fuck California. I'm moving to Texas. It can be that drastic. Sometimes it's moving outside of a county. Sometimes it's moving outside of town limits. Sometimes it's moving upstate or downstate. Sometimes it's that simple. Sometimes you don't even have to really leave your friends and family behind. You just might have to drive an extra 10 minutes to see them. Sometimes you don't even have to move. You just have to find the physical location that will allow what you're trying to do to happen. And geographic arbitrage isn't always about rules. Sometimes it's about, well, will I be left alone? So maybe you can technically look at two towns that are about 10 miles from you, and technically both of them would allow you to do the thing. But one's going to have a lot of Karens that cause a lot of problems, look for any way to cause you trouble so that you'll stop, and the other one is going to be very welcoming. That's also a form of geographic arbitrage. What I'm trying to get you to do today is broaden your idea of these things. The more you can think, right? The more you can stop focusing on the problem, Lee, the more you can stop focusing on the problem, Lee, this is for somebody in the live chat, the more you can see the solution. The problem is only necessary to be identified once. Once the problem is identified, everything should be, how can I, in spite of X, do the thing? X now is just a placeholder in a question. It is not to be focused on. It is barely to be thought of. It is barely to be looked at. It's all about the outcome that you're looking for rather than the problem that's there. And until you figure that out in your head, you won't do it. Somebody can walk up to you and say, look, I've been thinking about your problem. I went to a lawyer and a CPA and a business owner who's building a business very similar to what you want. I've compiled it all. I put together a plan for you. Here it is. Go do it. Here it is. Here's your blueprint right here. Go ahead. You know what will happen? Until you make that mental switch, you're fucked. You won't do it. You'll look through it, and you know what you'll look for? Why it won't work. Why it won't work. So you had this immense problem you couldn't do shit about. Somebody went and compiled all the solutions for you, and they have it 98% there. There's maybe one or two little adjustments that are going to be, maybe you need to take it to your own fucking lawyer and say, I want to do this and like sanity check. Instead, you find the 2% and go, I knew it. I knew it wouldn't work. I can't do it because I have a problem. That person is in the fucking matrix. Somebody is literally like grabbing your foot and trying to pull you out of the pod. And your goo-covered fingers are wrapped around the cable and your legs are wrapped around the other cable and you refuse to go down the chute. That happens all the time. So I'm least clarifying something. I know you, Lee, you're fine. I'm making a point here. Is it the problem or is it you failing to find a solution? It's more for others than you. You're just convenient. Next up today would be health autonomy. Let me tell you something about the cost of healthcare in America today, especially as it relates to drugs and expensive treatments. 90% of it are chronic conditions. They're chronic. The difference for people that don't know between chronic and acute is if I cut myself and it's not like I'm not going to bleed out, right? It's just it's a cut. And it needs to be cleaned. Maybe it needs a couple stitches. I need to keep a bandage on it. Need to use some antibiotic ointment so it doesn't get infected. Clean it out. But in time, relatively short time compared to human lifetime, I might have a little line on me from a scar, but it will heal and it goes away. That's an acute condition. When you get a cold, that is an acute condition. You get sick, your immune system fights it off, you get better. You get a bacterial infection. Even if you help it with antibiotics, allopathic medicine, you treat the bacterial infection with the antibiotic, and at some point, you don't need it anymore. That's acute. Chronic means ongoing, and if it's up to the drug manufacturers, it means for the rest of your life. Look at all those commercials I mock all the time on TV set. Look at all of it. Tell me how many of those commercials that they spend billions of dollars on are for things that are acute conditions, things that are healable. Permanently. Not remission is possible. That means you still have to keep taking it. You know, if it fixes your psoriasis and you have clear skin for up to 1 year, right? Okay. That means at the end of 1 year, you don't stop taking it or it comes back. Because where's the money? If you make drugs, where's the money? The money is in getting somebody to take your medication for the rest of their life. And when they don't need your medication anymore, to move them to another one, or when your market won't grow anymore, come up with a new drug to pair with the old drug. So if you're, if your antidepressant isn't getting it done anymore, well, don't stop taking it. Add Vraylar and give it a lift, right? I gave it a lift with Vraylar, and then I gave my kid a cookie and gave him diabetes. Yay. We've seen the commercial. You'll understand what I mean. It's all about chronic illness. Okay, this is the other thing. There are people with chronic illnesses that are genetic, not epigenetic. They're truly genetic. This person was born with something wrong. It's a very small percentage of the whole, and they are stuck with it. If you are genetically a type 1 diabetic, as of now, we do not have a cure. It is not acute. It is chronic. This is a little sliver of chronic disease. So we have 90%. And of that 90%, like 88% is this lifestyle illness. Almost every condition that they advertise a drug for can be corrected with your diet. with your diet and your lifestyle choices alone. And I'm sorry for people that don't believe it, but I'm going to tell you the truth about me. Even with my, you know, I had about a 15-year period where I really wasn't taking care of myself the way that I should have. I let myself get too overweight, etc. The last time I took a drug, other than like you hurt yourself really bad, so they give you some Tylenol with codeine, or, you know, you have the sniffles, so you take an antihistamine or something like that, or you rep your back so you have muscle relaxers for a couple of days so you can sleep. Other than that, I was a kid. I'm in my 50s. I have not taken prescription medication on any frequency other than for acute conditions since I was in the Army at least, and more like since I was like 12 years old. Somehow I'm not dying. Somehow I haven't had 14 heart attacks. Somehow I'm not overweight anymore. Somehow I'm actually relatively healthy. Somehow. Now, people say, well, you're still young. And I'm in my 50s, right? And that's not as young as people seem to think it is, by the way. There are some parts of the warranty that start to wear out as we get older, right? But if you compare my use of pharmaceuticals compared to the average person my age, my sex, my race, I am in like the bottom, you know, nth of a percentile, okay? The bottom of the bottom of the bottom. Like, I'll use more cannabis than anything else. It's really great for sleeping at night and being relaxed in your sleep. That's what I use cannabis for. That's the closest thing that I have. How am I alive? How am I not dead? So what this is about is health autonomy. If you are sick because of the matrix's own system, then your only solution to that sickness is in the matrix, and therefore you're tethered to the matrix. I lost weight with GLP-1s, $20,000 a year or more. Yay, you. Imagine what you could do with that money. Don't tell me fucking beef is expensive and then buy a GLP-1. But my insurance paid for it. And what do you pay for insurance? You'd be using a health share for $200 a fucking month and not giving a fuck about any of this, which is, by the way, also outside the system. Health shares are not inside the system. Liberty Guard says, same age, Jack, no meds for me either. It's amazing. How are you not dead, dude? You should be dead. These are life-saving medications. What's the very definition of a life-saving medication? If you don't take it for any length of time, you become the departed. How is this possible? It's possible because we do not have chronic lifestyle diseases that are here because of our choices and how we take care of ourselves and the food that we eat. It's that simple. And it's not expensive. It's not expensive. It's not expensive. Shut the fuck up telling me it's expensive. I guarantee anybody out there that believes this is expensive, here's my deal with you. Here's the deal I have for you. You record every single fucking thing that goes in your mouth for a month and the cost of that thing. And you send it to me. And I build you a spreadsheet eating healthy for the same fucking money. And then you shut the fuck up and you do it. And you know how many people are going to take me up on that? None. There'll probably be a dozen comments down there telling me I'm stupid and I'm wrong and I don't know anything. It won't be right now when I'm preaching to the choir, literally, right? But it'll be over the next week or two. As people find the video, listen to me say this, and they'll tell me what a fucking asshat I am. But none of you will do it. And if you do do it, when I bundle everything back together and say, here's your solution, you'll look for, well, I don't really like this one thing. So, it's Parsley syndrome all over again for those that know what that is. How about community? We talk about this all the time. But there's an old saying, and it's actually a matrix saying, but yet it's also a key to exit the matrix. It's not what you know, it's who you know. It's not what you know, it's who you know. So what you know is all the things that you know. Who you know is the people you know. Well, there's a lot of things that you can't necessarily get done yourself, but you can send an email or a text or make a phone call to someone who can. Or there's a lot of things that you don't know how to do, but if you can find somebody that knows how to do that, is willing to help you, that's as good or better than knowing how to do it yourself. That's part of community. But community becomes when you say something like, well, here's what you do. Since you are complaining about the cost of beef, for instance, why don't you just go buy a half beef? And this person says, well, if they're going to be honest, instead of bullshit you, right now, the amount of cash flow I have, bro, I just can't afford that whole half beef or that whole beef at one time. I just can't do it. It's not possible. And, you know, if you pull their bank book aside and you look at it, you're like, yeah, we're talking like $600-700 here. Okay, I get it. You don't have that kind of cash on hand for a single purchase, even though you'll end up ahead. You don't have it. We don't want you putting this on a credit card. I get it. But what happens when, like, six people get together and split that beef? Well, now they can do it long enough to where six becomes two teams of three, or maybe you're better off starting with eight, so it becomes two teams of four, and that becomes two teams of two, and then you end up with one person splitting a cow. That's just one example of the power of paying in groups. And someone's asking about health shares. I'll talk about that here in a bit. It's a similar concept, except you just don't know the person in your community. Is how it really works. And it does work, by the way. Create networks and networks of networks, including people who are still in the matrix. Another little illusion toward tomorrow, okay? And what I mean by that is all this like-minded individual shit when it comes to community is nonsensical. The most masterful human I've ever known in my life at building community was a dude named Buddy Shoemaker. I've talked about a bunch over the years. This guy made homemade wine. He literally is Dust on the Bottle, David Lee Murphy song. He was that fucking dude before that song was even thought of. This guy, his deal was you bring him shit, he makes wine, keeps half of it, and gives you the other half. So I would take him like two huge hefty sacks of my grandpa's grapes, and he would make a bunch of wine, and he'd give us back a few gallons of it. And what that meant is he had this huge inventory of all these different wines. He had raspberry wines, wild strawberry, huckleberry, you know, grapes, different grapes from different people all over the place. My neighbor's neighbor, I guess you'd say, my Uncle Pete's neighbor to the north of him, so three houses up from my granddad's, he had these huge rows of raspberries. Beautiful, beautiful raspberries. I used to go up there and eat them, and he'd come out with a bucket and go, here, take some with you. There's too many of them. They actually grew them like small scale commercial. And as they got older, he was in his 90s by this. He's like, I don't give a shit. I ain't doing it. But he would have that stuff. And he made this raspberry wine that was unbelievable. So he had the ultimate barter item. And he knew everybody. And everybody knew him. And if you had a problem and Buddy liked you, that problem would get solved that week. Because he was the guy that was who it was about who he knew. By knowing him, you knew everybody. And if he vouched for you, you fucking had it. You were good. You didn't have anything to worry about if it was anything that the community could possibly fix for you. Now, if you got sideways with a loan shark and you owed $100,000, you had your own problems, okay? Like, there is certain things, but if it was like we had something break at the house and we don't know how to fix it, somebody called your parents on the phone like, hey, buddy says you guys have a problem over there with your boiler. I know a little about boilers. Can I come by and help you? I mean, that was the level of that. We need to get back to that. You know what the man ever asked anybody for? Not a fucking thing. If you tried to give him money, he'd pick it up and beat you with it. Dude never wanted for shit in his life, though. Because if he wanted to go fishing, somebody's going to take him fishing. He wanted to go hunting, somebody's going to take him hunting. Like, whatever he wanted, somebody would provide that to him, not as a barter deal. It's fucking Buddy, man. Of course, yes. Of course. Like, you would take him fishing with you because you could say, I took Buddy fishing. Oh, wow, you got to take, but like, that's how this guy had worked this system. And this was the thing. He was a genuine person. He didn't do it to obtain that result. He did it because it was who he is, and it naturally resulted in that. I'll tell you the character of this man. This is a little bit hard of a story for me to tell without being choked up because I was a kid when this happened. Buddy comes down to my granddad's one day on the porch, and he's sitting on his glider. Right? It's like this couch thing that instead of rocking, it slid back and forth. He loved that thing. He's listening to his fucking stupid polka music on a Sunday, and I'm there trying to talk to him and trying to, you know, turn the music down just a little bit so that accordion shit ain't so fucking loud. Here comes Buddy walking up. He's got a bottle of wine in his hand. He hands it to the old man. He says, this is for you. The old man's like, well, what's this then? He said, that's your wine, but it's 9 years old. He said, I've been making wine from your grapes a long time. That's when your wine peaks. And I know you, Biff, you drink. And if I give you wine, you're going to drink it. You will never let a bottle get that old. So from now until either you or I kick the bucket, I will bring you a bottle. That's not a guy looking to get ahead giving it to my grandfather, who was a busted-ass old coal miner with black lung. He didn't have much to give back. It didn't matter to him. That is a network of networks. That one person is that linchpin of that network of other networks. We need to rebuild that because it's the right fucking thing to do, not so we can get ahead. So that everybody can be insulated from these motherfuckers telling you how to live your life. You see, I actually hate them, and I hate them in a totally different way than most people do. It's less about the money they take and the money they waste. And I mean, some of the shit we've seen in the last couple weeks, if you weren't awake then, you better be awake now or you're fucked. You're like super gluing the freaking cable in the back of your neck if you're not awake now. You know, when they're talking about paying money for sex changes in Colombia or transsexual operas in Ireland and all this other shit, all this money that was funneled back into Soros and the BLM protests and all this shit, like the money is enough reason to hate them. But what I really hate about them is they want to tell you how to live. That's what I hate. They want to tell you, oh, you can't build the house that you have. That's Newsom right now, right? Like, I'm less worried about the money and more about what he's saying to these people that spent their whole lives working for the American dream to live in the Pacific Palisades and then be told, well, you can't build your house back the way it was. We need to put a fucking high rise in there, turn it into projects. You can have one pod in the high rise, right? Because that's going to fix climate change. This is what I can't stand about these people. Any human being who isn't bothering you should be left the fuck alone to live their life however they want to. That's why people, you know, I get emails all the time telling me I'm got gay phobia or some shit. What is it? What's the word? It's not gay phobia. It's homophobia, right? Because I say shit about this transsexual nonsense. Bro, you want to wear a dress, get your fake boobs, whatever you want to do. You want to cut off your schlong and you're an adult. Go ahead. I don't care. I'll defend to my death your right to live that way. Just don't force it on other people. That's the same as somebody forcing you not to do what you don't want to do. I hate them because they do not allow us to live as we choose, even when we're not harming anybody else. The network of networks is the biggest way around that there is. Then exit fiat money as best you can. Again, allusion toward tomorrow. And this is use Bitcoin, use gold. Use silver. Use barter. Use barter that's not even a thing. Like, hey, can you come help me with my garden? Sure, but I need some help planting some trees. Bro, we're in. That's a form of barter. Now, the thing is, I could go out and hire a day laborer and give them fiat to help me in my garden, and you could go hire a landscaping company to plant your trees. Aren't we both better off if we help each other? That's one way to exit fiat. But the number one way to exit fiat today isn't about money that you spend for things that you want. It's about how you store your money. This is a place that, honest to God, it's my generation that was caught in the middle with this. And to some degree, the boomers too. We grew up in a world of soft money. Raised by people who grew up in a world with hard money, and there was a disconnect for those people. Most of those people didn't really understand what happened in 1971. My grandparents' advice was great advice for 1935. It was certainly great advice for 1900. Trust the bank as little as you have to. You have a bank account for only the things you need a bank account for, and what they told us to do with our money, save it. Save it in a box under the mattress, in a safe, whatever, cash on the barrel. Hard cash is what they would say. The problem is the hard cash wasn't hard. It was soft. And they knew it intellectually, but they couldn't make the sea change. These people I'm talking about, like my grandparents' generation, people that were already almost as old as me in 1971 when this shit happened. In fact, some of these people I'm thinking of were probably older than me at that point. You know, Mr. Debsky, he was in his 90s and 80s. So when was he 50, right? Right? He was 50 in 1940. So it's very hard at a certain point to realize that the Matrix glitched, that you saw the black cat go by twice, that they changed the rules. So they gave us this advice to save your money. How many of you in the live chat for me right now? It's about 165 people in live chat. You were told by somebody in your life those exact words: save your money, save cash, pay cash, save cash, hold cash. You were told that over and over and over again. Don't go borrow money to buy a car. Save up your money and then buy a car. Don't go buy a house. Save up your money and then buy a house. Oh, you got to get a mortgage? Okay, I understand. But you should be like saving up like 25, 35, 40%. Save it and then buy the house and pay it off as quick as you can. How many, like I'm seeing here, they're starting to come in. Starting to come in. Yeah, me, right? I was told that too. And we came up, those of us that are like between 50 and 60 to even 70 right now, we came up being told that shit, that 20-year span of like the last of the boomers up to the edge of the millennials. We were told this by these old people in our lives that we trusted, that loved us. We loved them. Save your money. And somewhere along the lines, most of us went, but this doesn't work. But this doesn't work. You know, you started figuring out how long you would have to save to buy a house if you're going to put 50% of the money down. And you realize by the time I have 50% of the money, it's not 50% of the house cost anymore. This isn't going to work. Like, wait, I can get an FHA loan with 3% down? Or if we were in the military, like, I can buy my first fucking house with no money down other than like closing costs. And not even all of those. Like, I can literally finance the whole thing. I can start making a payment, and that payment's already less than my rent. Wait, no, it can't be. No. There's got to be a trick. You ran the numbers again. You went, wait a minute. The guy trying to sell me a house, I know he just wants to sell me a house, but he's not lying to me. He's right. Oh, and I get to deduct this fucking interest off my taxes, and now I'm making some money? Okay, I got to play the game their way. Right? Becoming a status jiu-jitsu master means that there are some things that we do, including again and tomorrow, inside their system under their rules. This is the problem. How do you save money? How do you save money now? Well, I'm going to invest in, that's not saving money. That's not saving money. Buying stock in Tesla is not saving money. It's investing. It's taking a risk. What's your monetary unit of account is what I'm getting at. The reason you want it to be Bitcoin versus silver or gold is, first of all, it has kicked the teeth out of both of those assets ever since it's launched, period. From the very beginning to now, it's a much more mature asset. But how do I send $10,000 worth of silver to Pennsylvania from Texas? How do I send $50 worth of silver from Texas to Japan? Well, if I'm using Bitcoin, I go, boop, send, done. It's weightless. It moves through time and space at the speed of light. It is fast. Don't tell me about a 10-minute transaction time. Like, that's a long time to move that kind of money around, because it ain't. When you go to the store, I wonder how many of you know this. You go to the store, you whip out your plastic card. They say this is going to be $29.97, and you go, boop, or you tap now, right? You don't even slide it anywhere. Tap, and you pay, and it's instant. It's instant. When does the person you bought the product from actually get final settlement on the money? How long does it take? I'll make it multiple choice. Instantly, the second you do it. An hour, 10 minutes like Bitcoin, or 72 hours and sometimes more. Which one is the right answer? It's D. It's a 72-hour minimum settlement on those transactions. Sometimes a merchant with really good relationships with their financial institution, been there a while, that institution is voluntarily pumping some liquidity into there so that they can move that money a little faster. But in reality, final settlement is 72 hours, not 10 minutes. Bitcoin, somebody do the math for me on that. If final settlement on a credit card transaction is 72 hours and final settlement on a Bitcoin transaction is 10 minutes, what is the percentage faster that Bitcoin is? I don't have time to do it on the fly here. I'm pretty good mentally, but that one, I'm not sure. 72 hours versus 10 minutes. What is the speed? How much faster in percentage is Bitcoin than legacy finance? And there's another thing, too. With Bitcoin, we can run on the Lightning Network. And today somebody liked one of my things I posted and they sent me basically 3 cents worth of sats. Tell me how we can do a Bitcoin transact or a financial transaction using the MasterCard or Visa network for 3 cents. And when you can't, admit that you're wrong. This should be your unit of account. And the fact that you can hold it in self-custody and you can move it at the speed of light, the fact that you can pick up and leave, and if you have 12 words, your money's anywhere you go. Even if somebody takes away your device, they have not taken your money. This is why it's important to understand. This is a Bitcoin wallet I'm holding up to the camera right now. Okay? This is a Bitcoin wallet. There is no Bitcoin in here. This is a signing device for a network that moves money at the speed of light. This just makes my job of moving it or accounting for it easier. If I take this right now and go throw it in a fire and it burns up, then I can go where I store my seed phrase and restore every single Bitcoin, every single Satoshi. It's not 85%, Danny. It's not 85% faster. It's a magnitude of thousands of a percent faster. So 10 minutes versus 72 hours, right? If it was 1 day versus 3 days, it would be 33% faster, just to tell you how far off that 85%. Now, that's probably about right. I don't know what that is expressed as a percentage, but Derek, I was going to say like 450 times faster, 432 times faster. That's probably there. Stan Bridge says 99.9% faster. I don't know if you have any math behind that, bro, but I think that's, I don't think you're understanding what percentage of speed is, right? Like, it's, if I can do something in 10 minutes, but I take it down to one, it's not 90% faster. Okay? Now, if I can take 2 minutes down to 1 minute, that's 50% faster. All right? So when I can take 10 minutes down to 1 minute, how much faster is it? How much faster? There, 432x, right? I think that's about right. 4320, right? I don't know. It's so big, nobody here's figuring it out right now. I'll do it when we're done. I'll break out the calculator and figure it out. But I just feel like that 432x is about right. Okay. Next, so start using Bitcoin as your unit of account and start using barter and start saving in other forms of hard money like silver and gold. All of those matter. It's not either or. And then mental sovereignty. None of this works without mental sovereignty. I'm not going to try to look it up. It's in my Kindle library. But Ken Berry recommended a book to me on propaganda about 2 years ago that I bought as an audio and I listened to it. It was freaking phenomenal. This book was written in like the 1970s. And it goes back and case studies propaganda back for 100 years. And all it is today, it's the exact same pattern that's just faster and easier for them to do because now we have a network known as the internet that can spread the information, control the information, filter the information, and propagate new propaganda faster, right? Propaganda is as old as government. From the first time there was anything we would think of as a government, not governance, a government, i.e. a state, there has been propaganda. Because as soon as a state actually forms, there will be people that go, hold on. What is this priestly class over here all about? I mean, you guys, we tithe 10% of our shit, and then you guys pray to the Almighty behind a curtain, and then this keeps us from what? Getting lost in the desert again, like, and then shit goes wrong that they promised wouldn't go wrong when they did their magical incantations with the money you gave them. And you start saying, well, wait a minute. And the only way that a state can defend against that, because the sheer force of like stabbing anybody that points it out only goes so far. If you end up with the masses themselves going, bullshit, we're done. You in fact are done. So propaganda has always been used. So when the pitchforks and the torches came, that if the king could convince the people with the pitchforks that the people with the torches were the actual problem, they fought each other. He cleaned up the mess and claimed he solved the problem, no matter which side won. That's propaganda in a nutshell. until you understand that literally everything the state says, everything it says, is designed above all else to preserve the state's own existence, to propagate the state's own size and mass, to make the state more powerful, you have nothing. I don't care who it is. I don't care how much you like them. I don't care if it's Orange Band. I don't care if it's Elon working for Doge. I don't care if it's autistic kids that work for Elon. I don't care who it is. In the end, the final message out of the mouth of the state is designed to propagate the state, to protect the state. If you believe otherwise, you're the person that thinks HR at your place of work exists to protect you. It does not exist to protect you. Karen in HR does not exist to protect Shelly over in admin. No, I know it might seem that way because maybe HR somehow actually does protect Shelly from her boss or something like that. But that's not the purpose of Karen in HR. Karen in HR's purpose is to protect the fucking company. And that means if Shelly's boss is the problem for the company, then Shelly is protected and the boss is attacked by HR. But if Shelly's the fucking problem, she's right under the fucking bus because, and it doesn't matter if it should be a problem, is it a problem in the framework of the regulations the company operates under in the location that Shelly is? In other words, what Shelly did in California, it might be unacceptable, but if she did in Florida working for the same company, Karen in HR doesn't give a fuck because it's about protecting the company. HR in a company is basically like a lawyer for the company, an internal lawyer. That's really what it is. The lawyer is not out there to make sure. If you have a defense lawyer, he shouldn't give a fuck about the wants and desires and needs of the prosecution. He's there to protect you. And the lawyer that's a prosecutor shouldn't give a fuck about you. Now, there's ethical things they're supposed to do, whether they get done or not. You know, that's what the court is supposed to do. But what does the court do? Does the court really protect the rights of the state? Or does it really protect the rights of the accused? It protects the state. The court exists to protect the state. Doesn't mean the state won't lose sometimes. But in the end, the purpose of all government is to protect government itself. And until you understand that, there is no way on God's green earth, that you will ever understand the level of propaganda being thrown at you. And that's why it still doesn't, some of the stuff still doesn't make sense to you. When I look at the video I mentioned of Bill Gates as a DJ and all the nurses dancing or highly choreographed line dances while they were supposed to be working 97 hours a day or whatever it was while people were dying everywhere in the open, you look at the ERs and they're completely empty, right? And all the testing tents and shit, there's nobody there. And they yelled at people who videoed it, get out of here, right? Like when you look at that, there's two ways you cannot understand it. There's the intelligent way and the propaganda way. The intelligent way is, I don't understand why it worked on everybody else so well. Like, it was so bad that they should have said, the dudes in China in the paper suits and the guys falling over in the streets. Like, you look at that now, you're like, man, how did that, like, that is fine. To look at that and realize what went on and go, how was everybody so blind to this? Okay. But the people that look at it and go, why did it happen? It happened because it works. It happened because it furthered the mission of the state at the time. It's that simple. My final thoughts on this is we don't have to be all in or all out of this. We don't have to be 100% because there will be people that will rightly point out, Jack, you don't live 100% off grid. Jack, you're not completely on a Bitcoin standard yourself. I am completely on a Bitcoin standard in my opinion because it's my unit of account. If I travel to France, I'm going to use euros. If I go to Mexico, I'm going to use pesos, right? Because that's a unit of account in that location. Well, there's things I do in my society that I live in where I have to use dollars because that's what the person thinks. And thinking I'm doing a magic trick because I use bill pay or something and I'm actually using Bitcoin when I pay for my eggs at Kroger that I shouldn't be buying because I should have my own chickens, right? That doesn't actually change what you're doing. But you'd be right. Like, I have investments denominated in dollars. Totally, totally, totally accurate, right? I have a mortgage on my home, and I pay my mortgage in fiat. Now, I also funnel it through. We figured out how to do it we funnel it through so it actually ends up being a charge against my fold card, and I get a percentage of that back in Bitcoin. Yeah, that's gaming the system, but you would be right. There are things in the fiat world that for now are so dominant that you either have to really do, you have to go monk, or you have to accept that they're there. It doesn't have to be all. The more you can turn the dial toward exit, the more you become the visitor to the matrix. And I'll go ahead and give it away. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. Remember how Neo and all his boys got away, but they would go back into the matrix to fight the matrix? You know, Cypher could have just had a stake every time he went to the matrix. Right? He didn't have to rat out his boys. He didn't have to cut a deal. I mean, the script said so, and that's the real reason it happened. But we can take from the matrix. And while we're in the matrix, to some degree, we can only dodge so many bullets. We can only move so fast. We can only anticipate so much. When we go to Rome, we fall under some level of Caesar's jurisdiction. But I skipped one, and I just realized it. I don't know how, but alternative education. I'll fill that gap, and we'll close. So, number one, and this is what made me think of it, homeschool your kids. If you're a grandparent and your kids can't do it, homeschool your grandkids if you can. Because if you send your kids to Rome for an education, they will come back to you Romans. And then they'll have to listen to somebody like me 20 years from now, when I'm retired. Somebody else will pick up the baton, hopefully, and say, hey, it's all lies. How about get them ahead so they don't have to go through what you did? They don't have the cognitive. They never go in the pod. How about they be like the one dude, right? The one guy that was born outside the matrix 100%, right? I can't remember which one that was. Make your kids like that, but yourself. Education for yourself, too. Lifelong learning. Alternative education isn't just about, hey, I got my high school diploma without leaving the house. Alternative education is, I want to know how to do this thing, so I'm going to research it, develop my own skills, I'm going to get it done, or I'm going to take a course online, or I'm going to go to some event where I'm going to learn about it. I'm going to take an on-site course. I'm going to go down to a makerspace and learn how to use a 3D printer or a CNC machine instead of just buying one. I'm going to develop the skills, see if it really is going to do enough for me. Or maybe the fee that I pay the makerspace is totally a better investment for me than owning the equipment myself. Or maybe I'll learn enough about it that I can create kind of my own community makerspace just for my people, and we all load share the cost. There's all types of opportunities like that in the world for education. And that is as much a key as any of the other ones we talked about. I'm surprised I missed that one, but as soon as we were talking about wrapping up there, it came to me. I thought about the, you know, send your kids to Rome thing. So, oh, Dozer. Yeah, Dozer and his brother, right? Dozer was the one that was born outside the matrix, you know, native to Zion or whatever. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and handle a couple questions. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and remind you about T-Spaz and today's item of the day. I definitely think growing your own food is a huge part of this. We all eat at least a couple, three times a day. The better the quality of the food that we eat, the more we can do all of these things. You know, one of the biggest things is health autonomy we talked about today. Man, eating high nutrient dense food from your own backyard, growing your own meat, growing your own vegetables, growing your own fruits, growing your own eggs, all of it. And the best thing I know when it comes to growing your own food, as far as the vegetative stuff, is to make sure that it has everything that it needs. So it will grow into a nutrient dense food for you to eat. And what I mean by that is if you're eating food that's barely surviving, you will also be barely surviving. This is a big part of why we are so sick in society today. So you can even have a garden that the food looks pretty decent that comes out of it, but if you throw a Brix meter on it, its nutritional content is dog shit. Well, then you're eating low nutrient food. You will have a low nutrient diet and you will be an unhealthy human being. Plain and simple. And GS Plant Foods Liquid Kelp is the kind of final piece in a lot of what I recommend for fertility because it's primarily a mineral supplement. So there's a lot of micro minerals that are in kelp. The list is long. If you look at the article on the website today, you can see everything that's in there. And there's so many minerals that this plant needs, like just a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of, like literally a microscopic amount. But without it, that plant is going to be susceptible to disease. And even if it, or pests, and even if it doesn't succumb to that disease, it will overall be weaker. It will have less capability of taking up other nutrients, and it will provide you less nutrition when you eat it. So GS Plant Foods Liquid Kelp, I really recommend. But why am I bringing it around in February when it's cold and wet and nasty out? Because this is one of those things you can really do to supercharge your young plants. Get yourself a little squeeze bottle. Like something you would put a sauce in or oil in if you were working in a restaurant, like a chef would use, right? And mix up some of it, and especially about your second, third-ish week, start like once a week instead of just watering, including this in your water for that plant. Give that little plant everything it needs to become a honey badger. Give it good intense light. That's why we recommend the Barina Lights. Give it a cup big enough to spread those roots out. That's why we recommend the cups that we do, right? Give it good nutrition. That's why we recommend a good fertilizer like a Dr. Earth or something like that. But it also needs micronutrients. It needs those minerals. So give it a little bit of that. And because this is a foliar type, you can either soak it or you can foliar feed, meaning on the leaves themselves. It's also fantastic for you guys that do hydroponics, and it's really aquaponics and aquaculture, because you can only do so much with the water when something's alive in it, like a fish, right? But you can easily, you know, once every few weeks, take a little spray bottle and spray your plants. Spray them right at night as the sun's going down so they have all night to get in. Spray up underneath them so those nutrients can get in through the stigmata. You're one of the healthiest plants you've ever grown in your life. With that, let's take a few questions. I think that we had four. First up, Richard with a $5 super chat, just saying thanks for 16 plus years of valuable information. Richard, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Adam says, question, can you elaborate on what a health share is? So a health share from your end will look a lot like insurance. You, based on your age, and how many, like, is it a family? Is it a single individual? Whatever. You'll have a set monthly fee and you'll pay that fee. And that fee will go into a company like insurance. The difference is, instead of it like being Aetna or Concentra or something like that, you have to go to somebody that accepts it or whatever. And it's primarily for significant expenses. It's not going to be for your doctor, annual doctor visit or something like that. So you have to go to the hospital. This is the shit we should have insurance for, right? Because like I can get bankrupt because I was in a car accident. They'll pay anybody to do the things you need done, but they'll negotiate the price before they pay the bill. And basically, your money is going to pay somebody else's bill that month. But when you need something, their money's coming to you. These things work really, really well. I'm actually talking to one right now that Tom switched me on to, if you're still there, Tom, hi. And they have an affiliate program and all, but don't wait on me. It's something I'm switching over to from something else. And next today is Liberty Garden. Why would the U.S. government allow Bitcoin to exist if at some point it becomes a real threat to hegemony? Because they don't get a say in it, dude. This is something people have not understood since the very beginning. They didn't allow Bitcoin to exist. If there's one fucking node running Bitcoin in the world, it still exists. And they have gotten to a point where they can either fight it or they can try to utilize it for their own good. That's why. Because they can't kill it. Because it's indestructible. Because it's Bruce Willis in that fucking movie, Unbreakable. That's why. And it's also because at the one point in time when it was actually vulnerable, in the very, very beginning, they didn't believe it was a threat. They thought propaganda would be enough to kill it. They would just talk shit about it. They would say only drug users and, you know, traffickers and evil people use it. And people like, yeah, you know, the number one thing all those people use are $100 U.S. bills. So fuck off. It's too late. It's too big. This is the old thing. You know, first they ignore you, then they mock you, and then they fight you, and then you win. This is the genie doesn't go back in the bottle. And every single government that didn't strike early struck too late. And there's nothing that can be done to stop this now. Can there be things done to hamper it and interfere with it and maybe knock the price down for a while? Sure. But in the end, it doesn't give a fuck. It doesn't care. The whole world is a place where it can live, and it only needs to live in one place, but it never lives in one place. And it's a network that is incredibly valuable and incredibly secure, and if you have any significant amount of horsepower that can be applied to that network, the best thing for you to do from self-interest is to participate in the security of the network. We call that mining. So this whole concept that someday, man, my question has always been this. So how long? How long does it have to do what it's been doing since it started before you go, I guess this is real. I guess this isn't going away. I guess they can't stop this, right? And then the people are like, you know what it really is, man? It really is. It's this, man. The government actually one day, they're going to use it and they're going to make it their own. And it's going to be a global currency. Then you know how much of it I want? All of it. I want to go Michael Saylor if that's true. I don't believe that's true. But I mean, I would be like, do I really need, if I believe that? Right? Because I know what happens when you divide, you know, the whole world by 21 million. I'd be like, do I need two kidneys? Do I really need two kidneys? Surely if I had enough money someday, if I needed another kid, I could get one, right? Like, I don't know that I would go that far, but I would be thinking in that, like, I'd be looking around, what can I sell? Well, I don't know, man. Y'all can continue to be resistant or you can accept reality. Josh said, do you have experience with the Vavor 7 horsepower wood chipper quality durability? I don't know anything. I don't know anything, but it is the kind of thing that I'd be really like. I think Vavor makes some really good shit. And I also think they make some things that I wouldn't spend my money on. And that's the kind of thing that I would be concerned about, because as mechanical devices go, there's a lot of points of failure. It's a difficult piece of equipment to make. So I don't know. One more, fine. Christopher, can Willow or Quantum Computer ever hack Bitcoin? Well, you got to understand that the actual threat that Quantum has against Bitcoin is old Bitcoin. And Bitcoin that doesn't change. Bitcoin is not upgraded. See, people have this is like the shitcoin tards, right? It's 1970s technology, man, wherever, because it's been upgraded many times. And developing quantum resistance is easier to do than developing quantum capability. So as quantum becomes more and more powerful, if it starts to become a threat to Bitcoin, well, then you can upgrade Bitcoin to deal with the quantum impact. The actual threat to Bitcoin would be, you know, you have these wallets that have been, you know, people have lost their phrases for. You have these wallets like Satoshis with, you know, a million Bitcoin in it, right? You have all of these wallets that Bitcoin hasn't moved from in 10 years or more. You have all these wallets that are so old, they're pre-SegWit. And so the only impact of that would be is if somebody were to get quantum capable enough, maybe it could hack those wallets. And that would reintroduce that supply against the existing Bitcoin supply. Because when they tell you it's 21 million Bitcoin, it's really more like 15. It's really more like 15 million Bitcoin, because about 5 million is like stuck. So those 5 million units at some point could begin to be freed up. Even that, we're looking at 15 to 20 years at least. One of the things I think that people who are a little bit older have as an advantage over a lot of you younger guys is we grew up being told about what was going to happen, man, right? So I remember a career day when I was in like seventh grade and all these people came in to tell us about like all the things we could do when we grew up to be big boys and girls, right? And one of the dudes was a guy from the Air Force. He was an Air Force recruiter. Right? What are you doing here? You can't recruit any of these people. Priming the pump, man, you know, outreach. And you know what he told us? He said, by the time you guys are old enough to join the Air Force in like another 7-8 years or so, you know what you're going to be flying? We're like jets, you know? No, we fly jets now. Better jets. No. You guys are going to be flying spaceships. You guys are going to fly spaceships. And we're like, oh, shit, maybe I should think about the UFO. I'm going to be flying a spaceship, right? In 2025, we have a Space Force. We're still not flying spaceships like that, are we? Here's the funny part. Mid-90s, late 90s, I guess, I go to a thing for my son who's in grade school. You know bullshit they're telling him? Same fucking story, man. Dude from the Air Force, literally, I told my wife, we're sitting there listening, I'm like, he's going to tell them they're going to fly spaceships. She goes, how do you know? I'm like, I fucking remember this from like 15 years ago. Like, they're going to, and it came, she looked at me like, holy shit, are you clairvoyant? I'm like, no, I heard this before. My son is now in his 30s. We're still not flying spaceships. So some of this shit that they tell you guys that's coming soon, or really when, all this shit they're saying about AI, I agree that AI is going to be the biggest technological disruption in the history of humanity. It's actually going to be as big or bigger than the internet. And I think even though many of you live through the disruption of the internet, you really don't understand how big the disruption is. It can be explained just in the device you carry around in your ass pocket all the time, your phone. Do you know how many devices this replaced? Just that alone. And without the internet, this doesn't exist. This device does not exist without the internet. The cell phone, as we know it today, that's really a pocket computer without an internet, without apps and nothing. It's just a thing you can send text messages on and make phone calls. Probably the least used two functions. The least used function of this device is for a phone. The second least used device is as a text message device. The most used is to run applications. So without an internet, that is pointless. But then you give the internet to this, and do you know how many companies made a lot of money, like had thousands of employees, and the only thing they did was make freaking calculators and adding machines? Have you even thought about buying a calculator recently? I mean, there might be some high-level scientific calculator, but look at the app. The app on your native app, calculator app on your iPhone now has like four different modes it runs, and it's free. Right? So we've seen the promises of disruption, and we've seen what actual disruption looks like. So if you're 50 years old, 60 years old, et cetera, when somebody tells you, man, in just 5 years, there won't be anybody picking vegetables anymore, you're like, I've heard this before. Like, it's going to be like this robot, and it picks cabbage. It doesn't eat, but you know what it eats? You know what AI eats? Energy. I just listened to a great video from Mark Moss about AI and its disruption. The problem is, he said that. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't ask for a raise. It doesn't do this. It doesn't do that. And he ended with, it doesn't eat. It does eat. Every time you're like, I want you to tell me how to cook eggs the right way. And there's these GPUs somewhere in the cloud spinning really, really fast and using lots of energy. Okay, the world they're talking about with AI doing all this wonderful shit, the power grid has to grow at least 6x capacity to get close to it. How's that going to happen? What's that look like? I do think we are going to have to come to Jesus about nuclear energy. And as we do that, we start to realize a lot of this fossil fuel energy is bullshit. It is very polluting, especially anything that's oil-based. Natural gas, not as bad, but still not great. And it's less about burning the gas and more about all the things that go into getting the gas and transporting the gas, moving all of that, all of it. But we don't have it. We don't have the energy. As long as we're living in a world where when you get two or three days in a row that are 10 degrees cooler or warmer than average, they tell you to turn your thermostat down or up, depending on what time of year it is, because if you don't, we're going to have blackouts and brownouts. You're not growing fucking AI to the point where it can replace all the humans. Every time Trump says it, J.D. Vance says it, any senator, any congressman, I don't care what the D or R is after their name, it doesn't matter. It's a lie because we don't have the fucking energy and we have no plan to get there. We have no plan to get there. What I'm saying again is these are hard numbers. It's about 6x. This is before we start like 25% of the vehicle fleet is like plugging their car in at night. I know some of you are going to say the car can actually be a means by which we get there because it becomes distributed storage. Yeah, but we don't have, so you got to have the generation You have to have the storage, and you have to have the distributed storage, and it all has to work together. And you have to have at least half of the energy as power on demand. We don't have it. And there's something AI can't do that Bitcoin mining can. And this is not about Bitcoin being better. It's a reality. If I'm paying for AI, if I'm running my business on AI, if I've built a thing where I have AI agents that pay other AI agents using Bitcoin, which is totally a thing, because this one, this task costs 35 cents, and my agent can't pay that agent because my agent can't do it. This agent can, but the guy that runs this agent wants 35 cents. I can't pay him with Visa or MasterCard, can I? I can pay him final settlement with Lightning, but still I got a problem. What do Bitcoin mining operations do to get the cheapest energy? They locate themselves as close to power generation as possible, and when something happens, they can shut down their entire set of mining rigs. Freaking gigawatts of power. Just shut it off in seconds. I mean, literally less than a minute. It's all off. Because we have a cold front coming in and we need more power on the grid. So we made a deal with you for 98% uptime. This is one of those 2% of the time you need to shut your shit down. Push a button, it goes off. Okay. You know what happens? Nothing. Hash rate drops by that amount of mining equipment. It still works. Can I do that with AI? If I'm running AI GPUs or whatever the hell they come up with to run them, and I'm asked by the power company to shut my operation down for 3 days, can I do it? No, I can't do it. My customers who are paying me for access, you know, they're kind of pissed, right? I've replaced my workforce, 80% of my workforce, with AI agents. Now the AI doesn't work. I have to have high uptime. I can't shut. And shutting it down is not click off, click on. It doesn't work that way. There's a process to shut down equipment like that and a process to bring them back online. It's not binary. So all these things they're telling you are coming, quantum computing, blah, blah, blah. It's going to replace all the people. We won't need Mexicans to pick lettuce anymore. Horse shit. Horse shit. The basic mechanical tools to harvest crops we have had for how long? Since the fucking Victorian age. The first combines were in the Victorian age. We used to have farmers running tractors. You started them with a 12-gauge blank shell. Look at the first Fordsons. You took a thing, you unscrewed it, you put a 12-gauge blank shell in it. You screwed it back into the tractor. You turn the ignition and you smacked it with a hammer and that kicked the motor over. That was the starter motor. That's how long we've had combines. Why do we still have people picking oranges and lettuce and all that shit? Because you don't pick it all. Because you have to identify what needs to be picked now and what doesn't and what's got a problem. Like, that's why. That's why. We do not have the energy to run those equipment that can do that level of – we can build it. Right? They can build it. They could totally build a fucking Elon-looking robot right now that goes in a thing that drives around and lifts it up and down and picks oranges. And it will pick oranges out the ass. And it's still cheaper to do it with immigrant labor. And if you want to have that kind of intelligence and energy draw – on a nonstop basis, it eats energy and we don't have the energy for it. So a lot of the shit that people are worried about, it's not happening anytime soon. It's certainly not soon in the way that we think of the word. Broke dad builds. One more question. I got to go. Is the egg shortage real or manufactured, like the toilet paper shortage of the pandemic? It is not manufactured like the toilet paper shortage, but it is manufactured in that we did it to ourselves. It's because they killed literally millions of laying birds because they have the flu, but they don't. They go into a hatchery or a laying operation and they test 5% of the chickens, and like 1% of that 5% comes up positive for avian flu, H5N3 or whatever the fuck it is now. And then they go, oh, God, we have the flu here. Kill all the chickens. And they go in, 20,000 birds dead. And a chicken is not a cog. Like, if I need more washers, I can put in more steel. I can turn the machine up to run faster. I can have my two shifts become three shifts. We can work weekends. We can make more fucking washers or cogs or screws or bolts or nuts. How long does it take a chicken to start shitting eggs out of its ass? The answer is 22 to 26 weeks, depending on various factors, including breed, diet, etc. 22 to 26 weeks, roughly 6 months. What does that mean? That means when you kill a chicken that wasn't supposed to be replaced for 18 months, you're fucked for 6 months for that particular chicken. And we killed millions of them. We did it to ourselves. It is manufactured, but it's not something that could be easily undone. I think everybody should keep chickens, everybody that can. And if everybody that could keep chickens did keep chickens, nobody would buy any eggs from the Matrix ever again. Because if you, I promise you, unless you have a family the size of the Waltons, if you're keeping a half a dozen to eight birds, you can have all the eggs you want, and so can your neighbor. And there's something your neighbor can do to earn those eggs, and it's not a lot of money. Right? It would be as simple as their daughter, who's 16 years old and responsible, babysits your kids for date night every other week. And you'd be happy to throw them a few dozen eggs. We could, and why do you think they don't want us keeping eggs? I'm sorry, why do you think they don't want us keeping chickens? Because it's the first step out of the Matrix. It's the gateway drug. Maybe we'll do a show next week, because I got this week planned. Eggs, the real red pill. Something like that. We'll see. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another episode. Run you around. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.